And what's up, Evolver Planet? Welcome to the show. You are listening to Evolver Planet Radio, and that was a sample off Dr. Deer's album. She'll be joining us. She's joining us already on the show, but we'll be hearing her music throughout the entire show tonight. And welcome to the show. I'm your host, Jonah Bolt, and with us, as always on the show, is Aaron Shaw.
Hey, Evolver Planet Radio. Today's Friday, January 27th, 2012.
And on the show tonight is Cynthia, Dr. Thea Summer Deer, and we'll be playing her music, like I said, and you can check out her stuff at theasummerdeer.com. And also we'll be getting an update on her new book when we talk to her in a bit.
We'll also be hearing a Spore City update from Kevin May, who founded the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania Evolver Spore, a.k.a. the Peaceburg, Pennsylvania Spore.
And also at the second half of the show, we'll be hearing from Ben Lawson from the Gaian Mind Institute. That's gaian-mind.org. And let's jump into our first interview with Dr. Deer, who's joining us from the beautiful mountains here in Asheville, North Carolina. And Dr. Deer, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.
And so let's just start off with your music and your latest CD. And where the energy, where the story behind your newest CD came from?
Well, it's called My Mother's Garden, and it was a collection of music that I feel like I was pregnant with for a very long time. And it came together after I moved here, back here to the mountains from Tucson, Arizona. And I had been touring as a singer-songwriter for about 9 years and got pretty burned out on the road and came here to regroup. And these are songs that came out of being here and healing in the mountains and some wonderful musical connections that I had made with the performers who are on the record. And it was a beautiful synergy and co-creation.
Excellent. And now your albums and your music, you perform here in Asheville, North Carolina, or do you actually perform live? Do you go out on the show, or is it mostly just studio?
No. I am a part of a duo, an acoustic music duo called Thea and the Green Man, and we're at theaandthegreenman.com if you want to get more information on that. But no, I tour and perform with Thea and the Green Man, and right now we're concentrating on staying pretty local just because of the travel expense and the cost of gas. But we did two tours a little bit earlier this year. Well, at the end of 2011, we did a Southwest tour and we did a Florida tour. So we perform locally. We also do something that's pretty cutting edge is we're performers on Second Life. I don't know if you're familiar
awesome.
With that. Yeah, it's very cool. We're it's an online 3D virtual world that has many venues and stages and communities within it. And we perform from our home studio live to an international audience and are having a lot of fun being avatars and getting to do that.
Wow. That's a lot of fun. That's amazing. I've heard a lot about that. That's, great, you could perform there and really doing a performance for the whole planet in virtual world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great to be able to perform in real time to an international audience. Of course, sometimes that means having to play it late at night, early in the morning, depending on what country we're trying to reach.
Sure, it's awesome. And where did you first start getting your music background from? Have you been doing music your whole life, or is this something that you started doing once you were awakened, or when did it start for you?
Actually, the music is kind of cutting in and out, and I don't know if that you can lower that a bit. It might make it sound a little easier for me to hear you.
Yeah.
When did I start playing music? Well, I started playing guitar when I was 8, and my mom bought me a guitar, a nylon string guitar, and I started taking guitar lessons from a wonderful Spanish woman named Mrs. Montoya. I'll never forget her name. And she taught me songs like Guantanamera and things like that. So that was when I got my start, was when I was 8 years old. And then I advanced to a steel string guitar. And it wasn't until I hit California that I really started performing being out in clubs and things like that. And then when I moved from California to Tucson, Arizona, I made my living for 9 years playing music.
Awesome.
Oh, Dr. Dare, I'm curious also about your work as an herbalist. Does your work with plant medicine inform your musical and creative life as well?
Oh, absolutely. You know, earlier on, as I was developing myself and getting my skills both as a midwife and an herbalist and as a musician, I got a lot of criticism and a lot of it from my family saying, oh, you're never going to get really good at anything because you do too many things. But it it totally informs. I'm sure the reason that I hear the voices of the plants the way that I do is because of how I've tuned my ears to those frequencies and just being more sensitive through, having my hands on a guitar and moving breath through my body vocally, that it has attuned me in a certain way. So yeah, it's all hooked in.
That's amazing. You have experience literally birthing people into the world as well as birthing so many creative projects. I know you said earlier in the interview that you had been, you know, pregnant with these songs for a long time, these songs on your latest CD. Can you tell me a little bit about your songwriting process and how, I mean, the Green Man is your husband, right? Do you write
Yes.
songs with him?
Yes. It happens every which way. Sometimes I write a lot of poetry, so sometimes the poetry will come first and then that will make its way into a song, or sometimes the melody on the guitar will happen and the words come later. Sometimes it comes all together, which is very magical when they both kind of come at the same time. That's pretty fun. I love to co-write. I'm very much into co-creation. That's a lot of the focus of my herbal work, actually, is the evolution of consciousness and co-creation. So yeah, I mean, it happens all those ways.
Excellent. And also, just to talk quickly about your new book that you just came out with, and you have 13 specific plants that are in there, and you channel or contact with the plant, the Diva Realm, and have some amazing work and knowledge and information in the book. Tell us, the listeners, really quickly about the book, where it came from, and how it could help us with this new shift of consciousness coming.
Yeah, it's a book that bridges botanical medicine with what people more commonly know as plant spirit medicine. And it creates that bridge between heaven and earth. And the botanical aspect of the book, in the book I call it the story, because it's what we know or think we know about a plant. And that story, of course, is always changing. So in a sense, it's the story of our past. Whereas the chapters on the herbs are divided into three parts. So the first part is called the story, and that's more the practical information. The middle section is called the divination, and that's where the plant speaks to us like a counselor might speak to us. It brings us fully into the present, where we are in our lives right now. And then the Deva Speaks is a channeled piece, and one might think of that as the future, so that past, present, and future are represented by those three sections, really weaving us into a more full present moment where we can be informed from all of those different realms and dimensions from the plants. So there's information that is practical, and then there's also inspirational pieces, channelings, divinations, and guidance from the plant spirits.
Wow, awesome. And how long did it take you to write this book?
Well, I started on it about 9 years ago. So it was a process that unfolded. I think for me, just having this kind of information coming through and being inspired to write about it, I had to settle into realizing that this was really happening and that there was enough there to share that was worthy of a book. Then I shopped the manuscript for 5 years until I got a publishing contract with Inner Traditions Baron Company, a wonderful publisher that disseminates esoteric knowledge. And they gave me a year to finish the book, so I took a complete year off from my life and went into my cave, literally, and finished writing the book. So it was a total process from, because even after you sign a publishing contract, it's two years generally till the book comes out. So given I was, you know, given a year to finish the book plus another year to come to publication, it was a total of nine years. And I'll tell you, talking about being pregnant,
wow,
it's easier to be pregnant for 9 months than it is to, you know, have to carry a book for 9 years.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I bet you're glad to have it out.
Very, yeah.
So excellent. Where can we find out more about Wisdom of the Plant, Devis?
I have a dedicated site to the book, and it is theasummerdeer.wordpress.com. And that information is also available on my website, which is theasummerdeer.com. And that's summer like the season and deer like the animal, D-E-E-R. So all that information is there, and the WordPress site is completely dedicated to the book and creating discussions around the book and sharing with people more about these energies and different ideas about dimensions and time and all, and shamanic approaches to being healed and working with nature.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Deer, thank you so much for coming on Evolver Planet Radio, and we'll have your information up on the website so listeners can get some more information on that.
Great.
And thank you. You have a great weekend, and we'll have you back soon and get us an update on your music and how everything's going later on in the year.
Thank you so much, Jonah. I appreciate
thank
your
you.
Work.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And with that, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be hearing from Kevin to give us a Spore City update and Pittsburgh, or Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We'll be right back. And welcome back, Evolver Planet Radio. And joining us now is
Kevin May from Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Kevin?
Yes, happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, Kevin. Thanks for joining us. So give us a spore update. What's going on in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania?
Well, yes, that is what we like to refer to it as. We're doing our best to make it peaceful, more peaceful. It does have its fair share of violence here and there, but there's a lot of things moving around in Pittsburgh. I'd say over the past year, we've seen an incredible amount of change. And the metaphor that I like to apply is that it's not necessarily a web forming, because a web is known for trapping things. I like to see it as a hammock, which is this nice supportive network of collaborations that kind of stretches over the whole city. And as you may know, Pittsburgh is known for its three rivers, which kind of roll right through it. So it has all these different nooks and crannies, and oftentimes people can feel isolated in their little neighborhood or something. But over the past year, through Evolver and a lot of other similar groups, we've just seen incredible collaborations and all sorts of exciting events that have just been growing this evolutionary movement.
Excellent. What type of events have you guys done specifically with your sport groups?
Well, we've had two really exciting things we've called them Interweave, which represents kind of the hammock that's growing. And so the Interweave events were these, we called them consciousness dance parties, where we invited all these different performers and DJs and fire spinners and massage therapists and healers and tarot readers to just all come together and have a really eclectic event. And we had two of those, and some of the other sporganizers have put together some really cool things. Like, we partnered with Occupy to throw this interesting event, and we've also had some film screenings of we had Vine of the Soul, where we Skyped with the director. That was really cool. And what we're really excited about for 2012 is that it looks like we're going to be hosting the regional Evolver gathering this coming June here in Pittsburgh.
The regional Evolver gathering, nice. Like many regionals coming together in Pittsburgh or Pittsburgh?
I believe that's the vision, yes, to at least invite everyone from the East Coast spores. But anyone can come from Australia if they want, or Canada, or the West Coast, wherever they want.
So are you, is it, do you kind of head up the Evolver Spores, or you mentioned you have two other co-organizers with you and working with Occupy? How do you generally organize the events?
Well, I am really just one of many sporganizers in the Evolver network. There's a couple other people that have done far more work than I, specifically with Evolver. I really see the Pittsburgh hammock, as I mentioned before, as kind of unifying all these different circles. And so I've been doing work with a lot of other different sectors of the hammock, but Evolver is one of them. We basically have a planning team for each event. Like, we're getting together the planning team for the regional event, so we can plan it ahead. But we largely just set a vision, and then we divide the tasks of who's gonna focus on which thing, like reaching out. Someone's gonna devise a flyer. Someone can be in charge of the music. And we've had a lot of success with that model. And we're hoping to really be able to explain it to other spores, so we could help them organize things as well.
Yeah. Cool. So, what are your plans for the year for Evolver? What would you like to see come true for Evolver Pittsburgh?
Well, I'd really like to see people getting together regularly to bring together these evolutionary ideas, and I'm a really big fan of amplifying everything we do through using social media, and so my alias is Philosophical, and I do a lot of stuff through the internet to try and get the message out about all this stuff, about all these exciting, inspiring solutions, because I think that there really are solutions to all these issues that we're facing, and through the internet we can spread these solutions. So I'd really like to see in Evolver Peaceburg us having a lot more face-to-face interactions and things like gift circles, which we've done a lot of in Peaceburg, which we have a lot of stuff on YouTube about. If you want to check it out, just search gift circles. It's a way of bringing together people, and everyone shares things that they need and things that they'd also like to receive, and it builds community, and it also empowers us to have local economics and not be so dependent on the industrial system.
Awesome.
Nice. And Kevin, what were you, you had said some information we were talking about the paradigm shifting flowetry. Tell the listeners quickly about that and what that's about, what you do.
So I've been really inspired by all these things I've been participating in over the last 2 years, and to bring it all together, I like to share it in the form of what I call flowetry. So if you'd like, I could share a little piece that kind of weaves these themes together.
Absolutely. Let's hear it.
So, this piece is from my first album, which is called Paradigm Shifting Flowetry, which is available through the World Wide Web. And, I'm going to grab a sip of agua here.
Get prepared.
I usually call this one Transition Town Flowetry, but it could just be as easily called Evolver Movement Flowetry, because it's articulating the same process. So here we go. Yo, do you have the drive to create a world that's vibrantly alive? A place where all species can thrive? Well, this here is a gathering of the tribe. Is the 9-to-5 shift gripping your soul? Tired of drifting with the flow of the status quo? Then paradigm shifting is the way to go. Come take a glimpse down the rabbit hole. See, we live within an invisible fence. Everyone's walking around tense, conditioned by our own parents to focus only on future events. But then we miss what's right here on this big, blue, beautiful sphere. Gaia's got a message for us to hear. Do you have headphones in your ear? The message that Earth has given me is that we must use our abilities within our own vicinities, allow our creativities to abolish negativity. Nature's saying, mimic me and rejoin the symphony. And if we use permaculture techniques, we'll be having a fresh feast within the next couple weeks. And you may think I sound outlandish, but I don't want our species to vanish. Already billions are famished and ecosystems consistently damaged. But if you take a step back like Hubble, amidst all of the serious struggles, people are stepping out of their bubbles, coming together and forming big huddles, coming up with solutions to our troubles. So many brainstorms, it's creating puddles. There's a change coming, Can you feel that we're near it? A revolution of mind, body, and spirit. A coalescence of our heads, hands, and hearts. With you and I is where the change starts. So if you feel caged by an isolated feeling, sacred plants may initiate the healing. Layers of separation you will begin peeling. Oh, and did I mention? If you use the power of intention, then your life becomes your own invention. And if you take the time to reclaim your mind, you just might find that all of life is intertwined like an ayahuasca vine or the kundalini in your spine. And so I'm here to validate, motivate, and co-create. Because every day on Earth is a day to celebrate. And when we all meditate, we let blissfulness radiate and demonstrate what can happen when we all collaborate.
All right.
Wow, that's what's up. That was awesome.
First rhyming Spore City update.
That's it.
Yes.
It takes the trophy. That was amazing.
Thank you very much. And that has been largely inspired by all of the wonderful things happening in Peaceburg. And I shout out and thank to all my fellow Peaceburgers out there who are doing wonderful things, and all the other Sporganizers, many of which I met at Burning Man. I look forward to Burning Man 2012 and all the Evolver things that will happen there.
Awesome. Well, Kevin, thanks for giving us the Peaceburg, Pennsylvania update and coming on the show. And hopefully we'll talk to you again this next year and get another update from you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I'll just mention, if anyone wants to check out the Paradigm Shifting Flowetry, if you just search that on YouTube or our YouTube channel, it's called Cosmic Revolution KS. Can find a lot of videos also are up there focused on what's been happening in Peaceburg, and a lot of stuff about how you can start a gift circle. Just many, many exciting things.
Beautiful. Well, thanks again for coming on.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, and I hope you all have a happy Friday.
Cool, good talking to you.
Okay. TGIF, and with that, we'll take a quick break and listen to some more Dr. Dearest music. When we come back, we have Ben Lawson from Guy and Mind Institute. We'll be right back.
That old train whistle blowing like winter through the trees. Alas, you'll be my true love. Stay with me through the falling of a the color of a rose. In my mother's tended to the smallest thing. And when into a woman I did grow, it was this woman's heart I came to know. Sometimes we give a gift that keeps on growing in our hearts. In turn, we will all step in. Into the garden and all come home to love.
And welcome back, Evolver Planet. Now joining us on the show is Ben Lawson from Guy and Mind Institute out in California. And the goal of Guy and Mind is for their Eco Arts and Education Collective to nurture a culture of ecological awareness and provide the means to connect urban youth and families with bioregional natural living systems. Ben, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So let's jump into the Guy and Mind Institute. What is the idea, the brains behind it, where did it stem from, and where are you guys at and looking to do in 2012?
Well, it goes back officially to the founding in 2005. Myself and a fellow eco-punk survivalist gardener and eco-feminist friend, Emily, we kind of grew up in the punk scene in different environments. I grew up in the Northwest and she grew up in Southern California, and we both ended up finding a new tribal family in the punk rock subculture. And there was a lot of transformative energy and ecological consciousness that eventually led both of us to become tree sitters up in the Northwest. And we basically experienced a kind of primal eco anarchy and living in these kind of Ewok villages and having to work out a lot of different issues amongst genders. And luckily, you know, the legacy of the Eugene area and the University of Oregon and all of the post-60s, you know, activists that had that kind of live in that region, there was a lot of Earth Firsters and there was a lot of just scholarly feminist consciousness. And there was a really amazing synthesis of eco-feminist theory and politics and the practice of wilderness survival going on out in these Ewok tree sit villages. So we ended up, you know, crossing paths there, and years later found each other again in Southern California, where I moved in 2002 and started playing music. And we realigned at that in Southern California and wanted to bring a little bit of that consciousness into the city, especially because a lot of the youth punk rockers in Southern California were coming to my shows, you know, and they're also playing in bands. And so I was just in an environment and a scene where a lot of environmentally conscious youth were creating music in their punk bands. And we felt that it was important to facilitate their good work and get some recognition for their creativity from their parents and the schools and teachers who were, you know, just seeing them as at-risk youth, you know, potentially dropouts, and not recognizing, you know, all of the contributions that they're making artistically and as, you know, visionaries for ecological sanity. And so yeah, we created a co-op house, community center, art space, art gallery, and free school, and just kind of brought a lot of that stuff, you know, from the Northwest that we experienced into the inner city. And had a community center space in Long Beach for about a year and a half, and then kind of city pressure and zone violations forced us out of there. And we've had several different project spaces around Southern California since then. Right now, we're actually really trying to anchor a vision in for 2012 for building permaculture goddess temples, which... Nice. Yeah, it's we were both really influenced by a documentary film called The Goddess Remembered. And in that, it really goes into the history of patriarchy and the prehistory of what Rianne Eisler in Chalice and the Blade refers to as partnership societies versus the later, you know, dominator societies that we're currently living in the and the legacy of. And so that film really gave us a lot of direction as far as how, what kind of sacred space we want to create, especially when it comes to sustainability and survival and food production. We want to create sacred spaces that are functionally, practically robust and resilient, you know, on the material, physical security type of plane. So we're talking about self-defense training and, you know, just really having a more kind of, just more emphasis on the lower chakras and securing the platform of survival that we have so that we can, you know, explore and ascend up to the higher chakras in a safe way where we have our physical security and our basic survival needs, you know, food, water, energy, security, taken care of, shelter as well. And so now this idea of merging the goddess temple archetype, which goes back thousands of years, like I think the oldest one, is in Malta, and there's, you know, tons of goddess figurines and tons of monumental architecture and, stonework, which actually in terms of transferring your message to the future, stone engravings are the longest and most, preserved medium. So all the stuff that cultures create, really, if you don't like etch it into stone, it's not going to be part of the future. So, you know, for people that feel that 2012 is like, there's a potential for catastrophic earth changes to happen. Well, there's kind of a, I don't know, I guess we're thinking law of averages or probability that if we spring up enough permaculture goddess temples around the world that actually have, you know, perennial food systems built in, we'll not just see ruins of, you know, stone cities that have, you know, these goddess figurines or this goddess architecture. You'd actually be walking into a self-sustaining Edenic food forest that would last for thousands of years. There's a 2,000-year-old food forest in Morocco, which tells us the potential of using, this is before permaculture even existed as a word, but it's definitely one of the pillars of the inspiration for the potential of creating regenerative food production systems that actually, where you plug in, you know, the variables in a 7-layer, you know, forest ecology system where you have, all the different, you know, dynamics of the species working together so that they provide their own hydration, their own fertilization, and they reseed themselves through time. So, you know, I just encourage people to look into permaculture and to understand the concept of creating food forests that will pretty much perpetuate themselves indefinitely after several, you know, months or years of intensive human effort to get them established. Once they established, you know, they will last for a long time. And, you know, I really just kind of feel like whatever, you know, chance there is that, you know, this year, if it is, as, you know, scientific, validated, you know, theories of solar activity are telling us and other, you know, there's a confluence of, mystical and modern, you know, ideas about what could happen, you know, around this time. It may not be this year. It could be next year. It could be who knows when. But the idea that, you know, it's possible that the lights may go out on our modern civilization and that the information age may end, that really compels me to try to spread the meme of permaculture goddess temples worldwide so that whatever happens, you know, deserts may be oceans and valleys may be peaks and all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, properly dispersed throughout the globe, at least a few of them will last. And the hope would be they will stand as symbols to really promote awe and reverence for the sacred feminine. And, I've been doing a lot of tantra work recently. There's a couple of, folks in town in LA, Rena Desai and Rhoda Jordan, who both do amazing work to help people connect with earth energy and to understand the power of integrating, you know, goddess energy or divine feminine energy into our lives as males and females. There's an amazing healing effect of that, of those practices. And I just cannot tell you how much bliss I've experienced, through the work that I've done with them. And, I really think that, yeah, that's the kind of guidance that I'm looking for and that we're looking for as far as, you know, getting the energy that we need to do this kind of work and, really have some counterbalancing on the imbalance of masculine energy, which has been really corrupting and destroying life on earth for the last 5,000 years. And I really, both, you know, Emily and myself, you know, we had very similar paths of encountering ecofeminist scholarship in our career or our college experiences as anthropology students. There's an essay by one of her professors, Novotny, who wrote an essay called Women in Prehistory, which is a very, very short and concise way for people to learn about the egalitarian gatherer-hunter societies that for 99% of human history, you know, actively maintained a horizontal axis of power between genders. And there was respect and reverence of all types of animistic spirits and a real understanding of the life-giving and nurturing power of the female. And that was, you know, obviously transposed onto a cosmology of nature that where the female principle was honored and it was considered sacred. And, if you study how exactly that, got perverted and destroyed, you will really understand the importance of reclaiming the monumental architecture, because that's what was destroyed, and that was what was changed from, you know, the life-giving mother goddess to the warrior cult of the inscriptions of history as the telling of, you know, rulers conquering lands and all that kind of stuff. You know, there's really a lot of people, you know, even radical people and spiritual people, I think, don't really get into as far as their study of the history of patriarchy. And I really don't think without that understanding, there's going to be a way out of this, you know, whatever system, whatever name it's called, you know, feudalism, capitalism, you know, industrialization, all these things are symptoms of a deeper crisis, which is that loss of the institutionalized reverence of the feminine divine. That's, you know, legacies of priestess classes and just you know, passing down generation to generation that you know, the culture, the cultural tools to be able to access that stuff. I think, you know, for us today, now, you know, getting into what Tantra teaches is probably one of the fastest tracks to understand that, because I mean, if you can see what these people can do with a room of willing, and this isn't all, you know, people have a, you know, maybe a misconception that it's all about sexual work, but it really transcends that. It's about all areas of life and understanding, you know, our ability to draw from both masculine and feminine energy and to really refine and cultivate and balance them internally within our relationships, you know, our intimate relationships and with our relationships with the planet, and the way that we make a living in the world and all that kind of stuff. So I think, yeah, just a lot of solutions, a lot of things that we're excited to work on. And, you know, Emily is working on this kind of, creating this kind of goddess worshiping sacred space with permaculture, in the Northwest. And I'm always doing projects here, and we have, you know, just various ways to plug in for anybody who's interested. You can go to our website, gyne-mind.org, and contact us if this is something that you're interested in and contributing to with the physical energy or with any kind of other resources. We're always looking for help.
Oh, hey, Ben, man, you have touched on so much awesome stuff that really ties into the other two interviewees we had. Yeah. But just for the sake of the interview, and because I know this is the what you have going on with the Gyne Mind Institute currently, can you tell us in a nutshell, what is a permaculture goddess temple, and how, I mean, is that your word for something that has existed, like the 2,000-year-old food forest in Morocco, or what is that?
Well, this would be really the synthesis, because the goddess temples that have been found by, you know, archaeologists today don't have, you know, permaculture installations there necessarily. I mean, there may be some things that perennials that have lasted and whatnot, and some earthworks and whatnot, but the real conscious, you know, design and implementation of permaculture regenerative design systems has not, to my knowledge, been done in this, you know, it's in association with goddess temples. And I really think that if you look at Amanda Sage's artwork, she's really pulling down that futuristic vision of like reaffirming the divine feminine energy in the goddess and sculpting the land and sculpting our human settlement design and our stonework to actually to be conducive to permaculture you know, regenerative design installations and monumental architecture. And that's really why I love her stuff so much, is because it's all there, you know, the artists, and like Terrence McKenna said, it's the responsibility of the artist to tap into this sort of future flow of energy and information coming and kind of feeding back to us from the future. And the artists are the ones who are tuned into that and able to see that. And yeah, Amanda,
right.
Sage,
artists,
awesome artists.
Artists are the antenna of the race.
Right.
Yeah. Very cool.
Excellent. Yeah, we just picked up some feed. It must be all these solar flares hitting. We've been having crazy feedback today at the station here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Do you hear that as well?
Let me see if I can...
I hear it, but better? I imagine it's on our side.
There we go. Okay, it's going awesome. Now, Ben, you also have an upcoming event that I saw on your site, the Joy of Survival Sprouting Workshop. Tell us information about that.
Yeah, let's see. It is going to be at the Urban Permaculture House on Saturday, February 4th from 1 to 3 p.m. I'm not looking at the address in front of me right now. Definitely go to our website, guyandmind.org, for that. And basically, yeah, sprouting is something that we've been working on with the Guy and Mind Institute for many years. It is, I think, one of the most important ways that we can bridge the chasm potentially of some really dark times, food shortages, you know, skyrocketing prices, inflation, economic collapse, solar storm, all that stuff. You know, there's quite a bit of it that isn't, you know, speculation or prediction. There's quite a bit of like crunch that people are feeling now just financially. And there's a lot of facts about sprouting that people, I don't think, are aware of. One being, for example, that by sprouting grain and seeds and legumes before cooking them, you're actually increasing the bioavailable nutrients to 200 to 500 times the vitamins and minerals, the bioavailability of them.
Wow.
So I've experienced amazing, personally, like amazing feats of like superpowers of clarity and energy and insight and just physical robusticity that just from like, you know, a half a cup of, you know, or a cup or two of sprouts. And some you can eat raw, some you can, you know, you want to cook, especially the legumes, but really, and it's dirt cheap. So you can get 25-pound bags of, or 50-pound bags of the seed stock from, you know, if you want to go organic, there are some options, but I really recommend a place called Torn and Glasser for people in Los Angeles where you can, I mean, you're getting bulk, what you would get at a bulk health food store for, you know, half the price, you know, half to two-thirds the price, and you're getting them in bulk quantities, which will actually force you to do what I think is the appropriate thing, which is to have a reserve of this stuff on site, you know, at your house. You know, get 5-gallon buckets, Mylar bags and oxygen absorber packets, and you can create, you know, food security and an insurance policy for your own survival with sprout seeds and these kits with the buckets. That is a big thing in the survivalist movement, which I've been, you know, studying very, very intently for the past few years to get the best of their data and their experiences and merge them with permaculture and also with this sort of consciousness evolution movement, which I find is very, very healing and very empowering, but oftentimes it's focused on higher chakra work and not as not as giving as much consideration to the nuts and bolts of physically surviving on the physical plane, which is going to become harder and harder as we move forward from this point.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I love about the Guy in Mind Institute, is that you're working to put the joy in preparedness. And I feel like that's the only way it's going to get, you know, adopted en masse before, you know, it's a more disruptive process where you have to fend for yourself. So, I mean, I really encourage everyone to check out guyandmind.org. For Ben puts up so many resources there. It's an awesome site.
Yeah, and I just want to say, Ben, that I love what you've been saying the whole time, that I truly believe preparing for the physical is very, that most, most important as preparing for the mental, the spiritual side. You know, light, love, and stuff like that is not going to instantly manifest food and water and supplies and stuff like that when things do happen. So, you know, preparing for the physical is just as important as preparing for the spiritual. And, I've always been a big, you know, player on that and keen on that is, grounding yourself out and grounding yourself in the physical is just as important as meditating and going off in the ethers. It goes hand in hand because we do have some very big changes coming up, but it's exciting times. It's good stuff. Yeah. That's why we're here. And, you know, we're happy to be here and we all chose to come here and our graduation day is coming and a big transformation for the planet. So that's awesome. And that's what's up. And I'm excited.
Definitely. Definitely. I like the saying, tie up your horse before you pray. That kind of says it all, right?
There you go. Awesome. All right, cool. Yeah.
Can I just plug a couple of last things here?
Absolutely. Go for it.
Yeah. I just want to say that, you know, if you're in LA or, you know, some of the work is done in other places and there's going to be more content available online, but I have to really give praise to two of my local goddess mentors, again, Rena Desai and Rhoda Jordan. And Rena can be found at the Sacred Union Meetup. And Rhoda is tantraglow.com.
Excellent. Cool. Well, if there's anyone else in the Evolver Network or anyone else you think would be a great guest out there, just send them our way. We'd love to help you conscious raising artists and music artists and anyone who's plugged in with the Evolver Network. So we'd love to have them on the show.
Great. Awesome. Thanks so
cool.
much.
Cool. Good talking to you, Ben. You
excellent. Too. Thanks. And with that, we'll take a quick break and then when we'll come back. We'll do a quick little wrap up with some updates for you and what's coming on in the next couple weeks. So enjoy some more Dr. Deer's music.
She told me of the time pulled up on the shore and how the canyon held her. You don't want to talk about love. You're angry at my leaving. But I had to run away. Couldn't go on living life that way. Little gonna be a man someday. Take my hand and try and understand what happened on that day. Why I had to run away. Had to run.
And welcome back, Evolver Planet. That was an awesome interview from Ben. Check out Gaian-Mind.org is his website. And just real quickly, we're going to give you some up-and-coming guests on the show. Next week, February 3rd, we have Maria Renner from New Indianapolis. And we have an interview with Maja D. Oust. I hope I said that right. And she is the White Witch of L.A. or a White Witch of L.A. You can find out some more information on GodIsMyBoyfriend.com. And we also have Chris Hoover coming on the show. He's an author and visionary from his new book, which is Imagine-Freedom.com.
And after that, the following Friday, February 10th, we'll have musical artist The Flying Mystics, which features flutes, dumbek. I don't even know if I'm getting these instruments right. Djembe. Sounds interesting. So Flying Mystics Friday the 10th, along with a Spore City update from Rob? Or I'm not sure which city that is. And an interview with Thomas McGregor.
Excellent. And the week after that, the 17th, is music artists. We're having Cyber Pixie, the world's number one female DJ, and also a Spore City update from Austin, Texas, from Mitch. And then we'll have an interview with Baker Jacinto, and that is BakerTheBrand.com, on his new book coming out, How to Be Awesome Baker Style.
You can also check out EvolverPlanetRadio.com to stream the archives, and Evolver.net and RealitySandwich.com to read some of the articles we talk about.
And with that, just for people who don't know who Evolver is, check out Evolver.net. Evolver is a new social network for conscious collaboration. It provides a platform for individuals, communities, and organizations to discover and share the new tools, initiatives, and ideas that will improve our lives and change the world. And that is it, reporting from Evolver Planet Radio.
Good night, Evolver Planet.
Good night. See you soon.